Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Russell.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On this edition, the crowning of Inter against Milan, a two-star performance. Also, PSG are kept waiting to be crowned French champions. And is it top four or top five? And did the right leagues get the extra Champions League place next season? Nikki, well, it was pretty predictable that Inter would win Serie A. Not necessarily predictable that they would win it against Milan, their great rivals, but that was always going to be a feisty affair, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the moment that I think one half of Milan understandably has been looking at and hoping for, the other half has been absolutely dreading, because it's something that's never happened before. One of the Milan clubs getting to seal the title, to win the league title, by beating their opponents in the derby. Actually, Inter did have the chance to do it back in 2008, three games from the end of the season, but they ended up losing 2-1. They still won the league, but they didn't get to do it by beating Milan. So this was a chance to finally do it. And in fact, 16 years on, they wound up winning by exactly that same scoreline, 2-1, that they'd lost by in 2008. So the game, as you would expect, became incredibly ill-tempered and nasty. You had three sendings off and injury time at the end of it. Milan were raging. It felt a bit late. They were raging against the dying of the light. But in the end, Inter, as they have been all season, simply too good.
This is what you call a local derby, I suppose. There are other historical factors as well that might rub it in a bit more for Milan. What's this two-star business?
So initially, every team in Serie A is permitted to wear a gold star on its badge for every 10 league titles that they've won. Now, up till now, it has only been Juventus with more than one gold star. And in fact, it was the father of Andrea Agnelli who first came up with this idea of having gold stars on the badges. So it's very much been a Juventus-owned idea that we get to have gold stars and then everyone else, well, they can come along and they can start adding their gold stars as well. But the Inter and Milan have been level on 19 league titles. So there's been this tension in the air of who's going to get to go to 21st. So the fact that it was that extra layer of significance, we get to be the second ones to add that gold star to our badge, is another layer on top of the fact that it was a derby and had all that riding on it.
And I think the bitterness is something we need to lean in here before we praise Inter, because from a Milan perspective, I feel it was feisty during the game and feisty afterwards when they pumped out some really loud music, tried to spoil the title celebrations, because of course it was Milan's home game. So there were about 7,500 Interisti there. And it reminded me a little bit of going back, one from the archives, when I was there when Porto won the league at Benfica, which must have been 13 years ago when André Villas-Boas was in charge. And Benfica played oppressively loud versions of all their greatest hits, turned the sprinklers on the pitch and turned the lights off. Obviously, there were health and safety implications to the last one of those, which led to people like tripping up the stairs and everything because they were in the dark. And Benfica got fined a derisory, I think, €900 or something for it. But I think only a local derby and only a real pricking of the pride can bring out this sort of childishness. And let's be honest, we love to see it.
Oh, we do. I mean, for me, that's it would have been wrong if it wasn't like this. And I think that actually perhaps it cuts to, I mean, there's a whole side narrative here, which I think is perhaps not what we want to focus on today because it's about Milan rather than Inter. But I think there's a whole side narrative about Milan and their state of mind, which is that for a while, we saw it last season after the derby in the Champions League, there's been this belief among some Milan fans that maybe their players don't care as much as they do. And we saw it after the semi-final Champions League when they demanded an audience with them, that became international news. And I think that perhaps in this game, it felt like Milan almost showed it a bit later than they needed to, but you did see it. Because when Adli gets subbed off, he sort of storms to the sideline. He's kicking bags, he's kicking water bottles, he's kicking everything. When Tomori scores, he's got 10 minutes left. He's just made the scoreline 2-1 for anyone who missed it because Inter were 2-0 up and Tomori goes and grabs the ball at the back of the net and he is screaming. You can see it all over his face how much he's sort of trying to get himself and the team and the stadium up for this final moment. So I think Milan, there's a whole story there about whether their fans might still feel that it was less and too late than it could have been. But yes, as Andy says, even the stadium PA leaning into it at the end and playing the music extra loud to try to drown out those celebrations. Look, it was perhaps that was something I should have said right off the top, not just a derby. This was officially Milan's home derby. And so even though they share a stadium, this was still going to your neighbours' home game and taking that away from them.
Why aren't we, Nikki, why aren't we talking about Inzaghi as a coach now? He got Inter to...
I am.
Oh, you are?
Anyone who listened.
Okay, well, yeah, apologies. We're coming to it then. Because he doesn't seem to be talked about as much as you would expect somebody who got his team to the Champions League final last season, only lost against Manchester City, which, you know, it's still a good shout. And now he wins the Scudetto at home. Do you feel that we don't give him his dues?
I think it's been coming. I think we spoke about this a couple of months ago on the podcast about whether or not this title would just be a coronation and sort of confirming what he's achieved. In Italy, he's been the Re delle Coppe. He's been the King of the Cups because he'd won the Coppa Italia with Lazio, which is already a significant achievement. He won the Supercoppa twice there since he's come to Inter. He's won the Supercoppa 3 times out of 3. He'd won both Coppa Italia since he arrived before this one, which they've been knocked out of this one, so he won't repeat that for a third time. He's really established himself as someone who wins in those competitions, and then going, as you said, to the Champions League final as well, showing so strongly against Manchester City last season, certainly had confirmed that part of his reputation. But I do think probably internationally, things like the Coppa Italia, the Supercoppa, don't resonate in the same way as a Serie A title does. So I suspect that in terms of the audience all over the world now the fact that he's done that just cements it for people, makes it harder for people to ignore him. And I think especially when you look at when he came in, Antonio Conte left specifically because, and of course this is why Conte always leaves, but Conte left because he said, I haven't got the tools to keep this project going forward. He just won the league and he thought that was it. Well, I would say 3 years and a lot of high profile player departures later, they've been to a Champions League final, they've won the league, the project is still moving forward.
Yeah, and I guess, Nicky, they've lost some big players along the way. I think you look at the players that they lost at the end of last season, and you wouldn't have necessarily expected it to be a stronger Inter side this season than it was last season. And it is emphatically a stronger Inter side this season than it was last season. Of course, they've been brilliant in the league. There's the little thing in the back of the mind, or maybe it's a slightly bigger thing in the back of the mind about going out of the Champions League to Atletico Madrid and the feeling that they could have gone a bit further in that. But it is a cup competition. I know I'm going against the Simone Inzaghi credo there, but if we're talking about, you know, what really says a team is an outstanding team, I think everything there is in place. Mm-hmm. The signings have been great. Obviously, Marcus Thuram getting the crucial goal, I think, is quite pertinent. You talked about Conte before. If we think about him starting out at Juventus, how important has Beppe Marotta been to keeping this show on the road when Inter have had these financial questions over them the whole time that Inzaghi has been coach?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think he's a really important figure to highlight, Beppe Marotta. I think a lot of people, when we look at Juventus's decline over the last few years, the end of their run of 9 consecutive league titles, might look to the dynamic that happened in their boardroom with Beppe Marotta becoming the one who was sort of gradually pushed aside and then eventually said goodbye to, really with the Cristiano Ronaldo signing being at the centre of it, because at the time Marotta was really the one person in the room who was saying, I'm not sure this is good business. I'm not sure this is a smart long-term decision. It certainly felt sometimes like Marotta was the grown-up in that room, where perhaps the kids eventually sort of forced him out. And he's gone to Inter and he's really done some of exactly the same things that he did very well at Juventus, which is identifying players who can be brought in for, we always like to say, for nothing. We always like to talk about free transfers. Of course, as we also then always need to clarify, there's no such thing as a free transfer. Nobody's free. But seeing these players who are available who can be signed when they're out of contract, save yourself a transfer fee, create these opportunities to make money off them. Look at the Andre Onana transfer again as someone who's brought in who the club was able to flip in basically one season for a huge profit. This season, fitting that Marcus Thuram should score the goal that put them 2-0 up at weekend, on Monday, sorry, and that effectively seals the win over Milan, because Thuram was a free transfer in the summer and has been absolutely astonishingly good for them. Really, I think, probably the value-wise, the best signing anyone made in Serie A this summer, perhaps one of the best in all of Europe, because he's scored goals, he's set up goals, but he's also just liberated Lautaro Martinez in a way that I think few of us thought was possible. We all thought that losing Dzeko and Lukaku over the summer was going to hurt him, but in fact, Thuram's been this perfect foil for him. So Marotta has done exceptional work renewing the squad, seeing those bargains, finding those opportunities, and I think that is definitely a part of why Inzaghi's been able to do the work that he does.
Nevertheless, Andy, you would assume, or you would expect him to be talked about more amongst the, you know, the managers available in Europe to take over the big jobs. For example, the job at Liverpool, for example. And yet he doesn't ever seem to get a look in those, you know, given the way that his team has performed over the last two seasons, not least how they've won this Scudetto at a gallop with 5 games to spare. And you look at the goal difference, they've been banging them in, you know, both banging them in and keeping them out as well compared to the other teams there. Why is he not fancied? Why is he not talked about? Maybe that's a better question.
Well, as Nicky said, I think that first league title is really important, and it will change people's views of him a little bit. You know, you can't say you're able to do it until you've actually done it. But I think the point you're making is really important about the amount of goals they've scored, because I think the way that they play has been so gripping this season. And if you look at the big teams who are out there looking for coaches at the moment, so obviously we're thinking of Liverpool, possibly Manchester United going forward as well, and a raft of others perhaps in the Premier League as well as across Europe, although obviously it looks like Xavi is staying at Barcelona, and Barcelona's eyes are always bigger than their stomachs, I think it's fair to say. But I think the conversations that people are having over what is the right coach to take us forward. It's not about guaranteed victory, because I think people know that that's not possible. You can get yourselves in the mix, you can make yourself challenges, but particularly at the top end of the Premier League, to come in and say, we are definitely going to win the league if we get this coach, I don't think that's realistic. So I think the conversations we're having about various coaches, whether it be De Zerbi, Amorim, Arne Slot, and I suspect a few people will be asking about him in Ask OTC this week. Tune in tomorrow to find out. It's all about philosophy. And I think this is the season that will speak for Inzaghi, not just in terms of Inter actually getting over the hump and winning the title post Conte, but the fact that the football has been absolutely dazzling, that it's been aggressive, that it's been physically powerful, all those things that if you were a Premier League chief exec or director of football, you would be sitting there thinking, yeah, I could work with this guy, definitely. But of course, I think you have to make the point as well that he's done it when, admittedly, as we said, with the help of Marotta, but in a situation where there have been massive question marks over Inter financially every summer, and there still are. And Inzaghi has had this sort of sword of Damocles over him. Like, you know, will we be able to keep everyone? Will we have to sell Barella? And it looked like Barella might leave last summer, for example, before Newcastle came and took Sandro Tonali instead. It seemed like Barella was going that way. If Inter go into this season without Barella, that makes a massive difference, because he has been one of their outstanding players, maybe even the outstanding player in Serie A this season. He's been so incredibly good, and he'll be big at the Euros as well. So I also think, from the Inzaghi perspective, correct me if I'm wrong, Nikki, but there is a desire to stay at Inter and to build something there as long as he can.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'll be fascinated to see how his career pans out over the next few years. I think in many ways you can look at what he's doing and say he's just taking very sensible steps for who he is and the background he has coming into management. Because of course he was at Lazio, which is the club where he played for a long time and which felt like home to him for a long time. And even when he joined Inter, that was a bit of a big step, and one of those situations where he'd kind of given his word to stay at Lazio and then he turned around and decided this was the moment to go. And perhaps when the time comes for him to leave Inter, it will be the same. But it does feel like he had a chapter at Lazio where he exceeded expectations. Now he's come to Inter and it was touch and go at a certain point last year. In fact, it was pretty much dead on a year ago that Inter went through a phase where I think they lost 4 out of 5 league games, something like that. They lost 12 league games last season in total. So they had a really up and down season last season, despite going to a Champions League final. But there was a point in April, when the papers were talking about his job being at risk. And then it was very much really the run to the Champions League final that saved him. Now, as Andy's just said, this season he's taken the team on again. He's done things tactically that are brilliant and so much fun to watch. The way that even the members of the back three now get involved in the attacking movements. There was the famous game against Bologna not long ago where you had Alessandro Bastoni crossing for Jan Bisek to score, which is one centre-back crossing for the other centre-back. And we're not talking about at a set piece, I mean in open play. They've been playing this football that's really resonated and just improved step by step. And I think it's kind of natural that he wouldn't want to rush away from that, that he would say, actually, a bit like Xabi Alonso at Leverkusen, let's have fun with this while this is fun. And he's still, in managerial terms, a young manager. He's got time ahead of him to have other opportunities. And for now, at least, it looks like Inter are going to try to continue this project going forward. We're at an interesting moment because Stephen Zhang, the club's president, has been reportedly close to securing another big loan or a refinancing of the debt, which means that Inter will be able to pay off the loan to Oaktree and give themselves some more breathing room over the next few years. What it means in the long term is still very ambiguous. And a lot of people are suggesting that he's just creating this new 3-year period in which he's still likely to sell to the Saudis who are interested in buying. Time will tell on all of that. But certainly listening to Marotta speaking in the last couple of days since Inter won the league. He's very confident that the short-term picture is we're going to be able to continue with the project, doing things the way we've been doing, and we think we can keep moving forward.
And how do you say in Italian, I will be staying at Inter Milan for the next season?
I think the simple way would just be, io sto qua, io resto qua. I'm here, I'm staying here.
Do you do it with an Italian accent or do you do a Cockney? I'm only kidding. In France, though, in France, they may well be asking, why are we waiting for the coronation of PSG? You weren't supposed to laugh. You're supposed to translate it, Andy. No, why are they waiting for the coronation that they were expecting by now?
On reste pas, c'est le foot de Monégasque. It's Monaco's fault, basically. because PSG on Wednesday night needed to go and beat Lorient, which they did, with great ease and B, with great style, and going back to stylistically exciting football. And that they needed Monaco to not beat Lille, in which was a big game for the Champions League places. Monaco did get it done, 1-0. So that means that PSG have to wait to the weekend. But it was funny because there was a sort of delay between the games. So Lorient PSG was first, and both Monaco versus Lille and Marseille versus Nice were later on. So PSG won their game and then had to see how Monaco got on. Oh, you know, they're going to win the league. I don't think they were exactly crowded around the TV watching it. But it felt PSG's win as if it was a coronation anyway, regardless of what happened, because I think there are a couple of reasons for this. Firstly, I think it's because they did it, as we said, with such incredible style. I think the fact that Ousmane Dembélé and Kylian Mbappe, who'd been rested at the weekend, was so excellent. It was just like a demonstration from them of how they could how good they are and how good they can be. But I think it was like a little look into the future as well. You know, you think that because they've got the Champions League semi-final coming up, they shuffled the pack a bit. Luis Enrique brought two 17-year-olds in, Senimiulu and Zague, a right back as well. And really, when we talk about PSG moving in a direction where it's a bit more organic, it is a bit more Parisian, that was them doing that while still flexing their muscles. Now, this was a massive game for Lorient as well. You know, they're banging relegation trouble at the moment. And frankly, they shouldn't be. You know, they spent some money last summer. They've got the eighth biggest budget in Ligue 1. That they should not be down where they are. And PSG just turned up and tore them to bits. Now, I think, you know, you look at the Ousmane Dembélé goal that was set up by Kylian Mbappe, where poor old Nathaniel Adjaye at right back just got absolutely, like, his career got ended by Kylian Mbappe right there. You know, just the way he sort of Cruyff turned nutmegged him before laying it on a plate for Dembélé. Okay, you know, anyone can be made to look daft by Kylian Mbappe, but this was PSG saying, you know what, we can do exactly what we want in this league. We are a team that's looked as for a lot of the season like it's in development, but you know what, we're going for the quadruple. We're not just the best team in France. We're aiming to be bigger than that. And it was a real statement of intent, I thought.
Can we compare them to the PSG of last season? I know we've talked on OTC before about this being a very different PSG, the project moving on and so on, but also it's a PSG which has got to have one eye on next season. What happens next season when their talisman is all but expected to leave to go to Madrid? Where are we now in respect to, you know, looking forward for PSG? What does this season and their achievements so far tell us?
I think it's too soon to know what the achievements are, because the big one, of course, would be the Champions League, and what a sort of send-off that would be for Mbappe if he was to somehow win it. I think it was interesting listening to Luis Enrique the other day talking about differences, what he perceives as the difference in this team, and him saying, well, I think it's happy. And I think that's such a telling word. And I think it's one of those things that I don't know, sometimes I wonder if I overdo it, but I do sometimes come back to, actually, part of a manager's jobs and part of what makes teams successful is vibes. It is having the right way of approaching games and players enjoying being together and spending time together. And I was wondering to myself, when we come up against that idea of happy, I was wondering if, to a certain extent, even because he is in the end the most important player in it, he is in the end the one that makes it all special, how much of that is about where Kylian Mbappe's head is right now. I think he's come into football from day one as someone with a point to prove. People who coached him when he was a teenager have talked about that all the way back to when he was a kid, even being absolutely convinced that he was going to be this world-class talent. And of course, lots of kids have that conviction and don't follow up on it. He actually followed up on it, but still he sort of came in as this kid with a point to prove. And there's something about the demeanor right now that, even though he's still out there doing all that, it just feels almost less like he's got that frantic desire to prove a point, more that he just knows now that he's brilliant and he can do it. And I think there is a sort of transition for young players who've got that level of talent, from the urgent phase to the confident phase. And I think maybe that is rubbing off on everyone, and perhaps the knowledge that he's most likely going to be making this big step now to Real Madrid, which was also always part of his plan. I don't know, it rings back to Cristiano Ronaldo, who of course went from Manchester United to Real Madrid at a similar age. He'd already won the Champions League, he'd already won the Ballon d'Or, but it was still a shifting from one phase of his career to the next phase, where he really went from the coming guy to the guy. And I think that Mbappe is hitting that phase now, and perhaps that is a part of the happiness and swagger that this team has.
And I suppose at this moment, we're probably finding out a little bit more about Luis Enrique, though, than we are about Kylian Mbappe, because Luis Enrique got given a hospital pass at the beginning of the season in the way that Mbappe was treated by the people that run the club. And so he was sat there going, well, can I play him? Can I build my team around him? And he was told, no, you can't, because, you know, he won't sign a new contract and he won't leave. So you have to leave him out. Eventually, as we know, that was smoothed over, that financially smoothed over between QSI and Mbappe. But it's meant that he's not really, I know it's not all about his enjoyment. Very little about being a head coach is about enjoyment, really, is it? But it doesn't feel like he's been able to enjoy Kylian Mbappe. Maybe at this moment that he actually can. He certainly could at Lorient last night. It was definitely one of those moments where you felt, I can just put your feet up and go, oh yeah, the best player in the world plays for me. This is pretty cool. And if it doesn't last forever, fine. Because the other thing worth noting is, since he has been set to leave the club, since it's become public knowledge that he's definitely gonna leave. Now, Luis Enrique, as you said, Don, has kept an eye on next season. And he's been quite clear about that, about the fact that we've got to look forward and try a few different things. So whereas I think previous eras, like, people have complained, how can PSG get to the level where they can win the Champions League when they're not tested enough in Ligue 1? And that's been a popular refrain. But Luis Enrique has looked at it a different way. He's like, all right, maybe I can try some stuff. You know, maybe I can keep us competitive by keeping everyone fighting for their place, by trying some different stuff out. And if you go back to last Sunday against Lyon, a 1-4-1 at the Parc des Princes, one of their best performances of the season, with neither Dembélé or Mbappe playing a single minute, which I think is quite interesting, because it underlines that, A, they can still be really competitive next season. And yeah, they'll go out and buy another big striker, whether it's Osimhen or whoever else, to replace Kylian Mbappe in a sporting and a media sense. But you look at what Barcola, Gonçalo Ramos are able to do now. It's a lot. It's a lot. And obviously Leon helped them, as they always do, by trying to go toe to toe with them. And, you know, that's really helpful for PSG. But the style of that performance, we keep talking about style of football in this pod, but it's really important in European football at the moment. And that's exactly why you bring Luis Enrique on board. And so you've got this double effect. And at the moment, as Nicky says, the proof will only be in the pudding if they do end up with that quadruple, if they do end up winning the Champions League. But for the moment, it looks as if Luis Enrique is managing the players and the personalities absolutely perfectly, which is not easy at a club like PSG. And it's not easy when you're Luis Enrique, who sometimes has that sort of bull in a china shop vibe to him. So I think when you look at the way they played at Lorient, it was a sense of, right, you're probably a bit annoyed to play at the week, not to play at the weekend, weren't you? Looking at Dembélé and Mbappé. Now show me. And they did show him.
Feels like this is an important week or so for PSG. They've got to show us, don't they? And they have to show what they can do in the Champions League. The crowning of the French title is one thing, but Champions League semi-final, well, whole other business, you'd have thought.
Yeah, but it feels like it's falling well for them. I think when you look at the competition, of course, they're still not the favourites. Real Madrid just knocked out Man City, and I think knocking Real Madrid out of this competition is one of those things that is beyond most teams. But still, if you were to have looked at this competition going into the last 16, you wouldn't have had them that close to the list of who you thought was going to win it, or at least I wouldn't have. Whereas now I look at who's left in the competition, I think, well, it's Madrid is my favourites, and it's probably PSG second. And I think that's partly the draw has fallen for them in the right order. It's partly, and I talk about this, this is one of my annual themes I come back to every single year, but timing is so important in European competition. It matters what form you're in, at what phase of the competition. You have to be hitting your stride as we get into this part of the spring if you want to win it. It's not just about bullying people in the group stages. It's falling into place to give them a chance. And yeah, I just come back to this idea again of, flip it around and think about Jurgen Klopp as a manager and when he first said he was going to leave Liverpool. And there was a period when Liverpool were playing this great football and everyone was giving this idea that because he said he was going, it had almost liberated everyone. And it was like, okay, well, let's make it a great send-off. And of course, that's gone in a different direction now, and there's a whole separate conversation. But that's a manager, not a player. And I do think that with Mbappe, there's just a freedom to his game right now that's contagious and that's got the rest of the team going with him.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Talking of the Champions League, Andy, we now know where the extra place in next season's Champions League will go, which leagues will get those extra places. And it's not the Premier League, by the way. So there will be five teams qualifying in the Champions League for the leagues that have been most coefficient. Let's put it that way. Andy, did it surprise you? Has the coefficiency, which needs a bit of explaining, a bit of math, as the Americans would call it, did it go to the right leagues?
I like the way you turned coefficient into a verb. I'm definitely in favour of that. And I think maybe if England had done that at an earlier stage, they'd be looking at a fifth Champions League place. To clarify, Italy have definitely got the fifth Champions League place next season. So fifth in Serie A will be a Champions League spot for next season. Germany are highly likely to be the other country that get that. And it's based on the coefficient for this season. So the countries whose teams who've done best in UEFA club competition this season. So it's not a historical thing. It's just on this season. Now, England might and the Premier League might feel a little bit hard done by, because if you go backwards, in six of the last seven seasons before this season, they would have got it. And this is due to the reformatting of the Champions League. It's still possible for England to get that fifth spot, but it would take a quite improbable set of results. So you have three German teams in semi-finals, of course, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen, with a minimum of six matches left each. They need three draws between them in that time to mathematically seal it, whereas Villa would need to beat who are England's only hope, of course, in the Conference League, would need to beat Olympiacos twice and get to the final. So they get 2 points for each win and 1 point for getting to the final, because you get a point for passing around as well. And need the Germans to end up with nothing in the meantime if they were to clinch it. So incredibly unlikely, despite Villa's best efforts. And really, I think Italy, a little bit like France, we'll come to Germany in a minute, who've almost sealed it, which works out pretty well for Dortmund because they're in fifth spot at the moment. With Italy, I think it's a little bit like France in that this season, the European race is like last season, because if you look at the depth of teams that are competing for Europe, and, you know, last season in Italy, you're going down to about seventh or eighth and you're thinking, yeah, here are teams that could be, you know, valuable assets in Europe. You know, you're not just looking at the top four. You're looking at Atalanta, Roma, Lazio. You know, Lazio could still get there, couldn't they? And it's the same in France, where you look at that, like competing for seventh at the moment, Rennes, Marseille and Lyon, who are three absolutely massive clubs who are basically having a celebrity death match for the Conference League place, which is remarkable and which is not what we imagined when the UEFA Europa Conference League was created in the first place. So I think it's always a difficult thing. And I think it's something we refocus on when we say, look at Bologna, looking very likely to get a Champions League place after that win at Roma on Monday now. You know, they're well ensconced in fourth. Also, Brest in third place as stand in France. I do kind of wonder, going forward, obviously it's great for them. It's great for sport. We all love an underdog story. But in terms of that depth, the bigger clubs that get into European club competition, it works better for the country continuously. And the powers that be would love that, because they're more likely to be able to cope with European competition. They're more likely to do well in it. They're more likely to rack up the coefficient points. But certainly, Nicky, having that depth that Italy and France have had in the last couple of seasons is definitely helped them, right?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, even just to look at this season's results and if it is going to be Italy and Germany, which Italy is guaranteed, as you said, Germany looks very likely. It's almost been achieved in different ways. Italy have guaranteed their spot through basically every team in Europe pulling its weight. Every team that qualified for Europe has contributed towards this strong coefficient. Whereas with Germany, it's a bit more about the concentration of a smaller group of teams doing really well. The fact that Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund are still going in the Champions League has dragged things up for everybody. So it's interesting how that happens. That's also boring, though, it is to always come back to. It's partly reflected in the realities of the financial situation. Bayern Munich are the one German club really that can hang with the very top clubs in Europe financially. Borussia Dortmund, though, are 12th in the Deloitte Money League. So that these are the clubs that are expected to. Whereas I think there's been a few for Italy that are defying gravity a bit at the moment. And Atalanta, of course, are the ones that we talk about a lot, and rightly so, because their European performance is astonishing. Certainly there's been a collective underperformance of the English clubs. There's no getting away from that, because again, if you want to talk about those hard tacks, six of the top 10 richest clubs in the Deloitte Money League are English, and some of those did horrendously. Manchester United not even getting out of the group stage, not even going on to the Europa League, that has an impact. It's definitely an interesting picture how we get to this point. What it means for next season is absolutely hugely intriguing, because, of course, it's going to be the first time with this new format. In specifically Italian terms, there's a possibility it could even be six teams in the Champions League, because right now they're guaranteed five. But if one of Roma or Atalanta were to win the Europa League without qualifying via the league, that would be an extra spot again that they would get. And then, as Andy's kind of hinted at there, though, there is a flip side of that, which is if some of those teams aren't ready for the Champions League, maybe it'll drag them down next year. So it's going to be a fun dynamic, I think, for the next few years to see how these extra Champions League spots play out, what the trends that are created from it all. I still don't know if I think it's a positive that we're losing that group stage format, because I have my skepticism about the new one, but if nothing else, it's definitely interesting and something different to look at.
Which of the Italian teams are likely to benefit, though, from a fifth place at least?
Well, Bologna, as Andy have said, are almost certainly going to get in now via the fourth spot. It's looking very much like the top four are locked in. So Bologna, who you might have thought would be the team to benefit from that, perhaps not. The fifth spot is going to go down to the wire, I would guess, between Atalanta, Roma and Lazio. Lazio, who have started winning games again under Igor Tudor, are very much snapping at the heels. And of course, with Roma and Atalanta having those extra European commitments, in Atalanta's case, they've also just gone to the Coppa Italia final. Whether or not that would benefit Lazio, we'll see. But one of those teams is going to benefit and wouldn't otherwise be in the Champions League. And as I just said, there's a significant possibility. I wouldn't necessarily say it's the most likely outcome, but there's a real possibility that one of Roma or Atalanta could win the Europa League without going in and even give Italy a sixth team in the Champions League next season.
I mean, the reconstituted format of the Champions League starting in September is, as Nicky says, going to make it really interesting. I think in terms of England not making it immediately, it's maybe quite a good thing for the balance of power in Europe. Of course, the Premier League will still be the richest, and, you know, one season isn't a trend, and one season isn't going to make an enormous difference to the balance of power. But if you look at Italy and probably Germany getting that extra place, you're looking at five clubs who are not going to just benefit from Champions League money, but going to benefit from more Champions League money. Because whether it makes for better football, whether it makes for a more competitive competition, is very much open to question, but they get 8 games instead of 6 guaranteed, which makes a difference. And it definitely makes a difference if you're an Italian or German club, which aren't the most lucrative markets out there. How does that affect the domestic leagues? Well, maybe you're getting greater inconsistency out of those teams. I mean, I find it quite hard to imagine, for example, not just Bologna or Roma or Atalanta struggling to cope with the demands of those extra games. And, you know, we're talking so much at the moment about how much football players are playing. But Brest, for example, we talked about them before. They're in third place at the moment. Lille are going to try and steal that third spot off them. Monaco look pretty much home and hosed in terms of finishing in the top three in France. But for a club like Brest, it's a massive leap anyway. So they were told this week by UEFA that the Francois Leblay, where they play, they can only have crowds of 5,000 if they play there because they've got 3 semi-permanent stands which are not allowed by UEFA, so they could only use one stand. So they'll have to go and play at Lorient, or they'll have to go and play at Nantes, or they'll have to just play in front of 5,000 people. Then you've got the squad you need for like the extra amount of football. They're struggling, I think, in a wider sense. Their women's team are threatening to go on strike at the moment because they're not being paid properly. So they're really finding it tough to develop as a club, to go up a dimension, really. But you know, before we even get into that, we're just talking about coping with the extra physical demands. Now, I think for if we go to Germany, who are likely to get it, for a Dortmund or a Leipzig, that's okay. You know, I think that's doable. I'm really interested to see what happens with Stuttgart, because, of course, Stuttgart could be losing their two strikers who've made it all happen this weekend. Dennis Undav is still on loan with Brighton, and there's some dispute over the nature of that deal, whether Stuttgart can just action an automatic buy clause, or you know, whether Brighton can bring him back, because they would either like to play him or sell him on the open market, I think, rather than the fee that they originally agreed with Stuttgart. Say with Guirassy, who scored 25 Bundesliga goals already this season, has been brilliant. Premier League clubs are interested in him, and he could go as well. So I think it's a lot to deal with. So while there's a financial bounty, the effect this has, A, on the quality of Champions League football, and B, on the quality of the domestic football in those leagues where teams are experiencing that for the first time in an expanded programme, I think is going to be really interesting to see.
Just to build on what Andy said as well, I know, like, numbers aren't always the most exciting thing, but just to bring back the reality of what we're talking about here, Real Madrid at the top of the Deloitte Money League, €831.4 million in revenue last season, even within the top 20 that we're talking about. So when we talk about top 20, you might imagine those are all close. Go to the bottom end of that, or close to it. Napoli in 19th on that list, so still in the top 20, had revenues, and there's a team that went to the Champions League quarterfinals, by the way, last season, revenues of €267 million. So somewhere between a third and a quarter of what Real Madrid are bringing in. And then talk about a club like Bologna coming in, and I just pulled that up quickly, so they might have more recent numbers, but the balance sheet for 2022-23, they had revenues of around €80 million. So literally a tenth of what the teams are making at the top of this list. So yes, the Champions League is a huge difference to a club like Bologna compared to the difference that it makes at a club like Man City, where it's lovely to have, but in the end, they're going to make a huge amount of money even without it. For clubs that are coming into this, the extra teams that are getting these places, it's a huge difference to their revenues and to what they're able to do going forward.
I imagine that means that there's still a lot to play for in Serie A, which brings us to the perfect opportunity to recommend a game of the week. Should we start in Serie A, if you're ready? Because I know we also ask you for a food pairing. Andy's got his hamburger wrapped up. So give us something better to eat, please.
Yeah, it was a tough week for Italy, actually, to pick the game of the week, because there's a few games involving teams that are trying to get in that fifth Champions League spot that are, I think, all of them potentially compelling. Lazio, Verona playing well. They're an obstinate team getting results at the moment. Similar story for Atalanta against Empoli, because Empoli have been extremely hard to beat since over the last few weeks. They've really just tightened up at the back a lot. But I'm going to go with Napoli against Roma, because of course Napoli are the reigning champions. Roma currently hold fifth spot. Napoli have been honestly dreadful recently. In theory, they could still get back into this fight, but in practice, they look like a team that bubble has thoroughly burst. And for that reason, I'm going to suggest, since it's in Naples, get yourself some pizza fritta, fried pizza, because the team looks absolutely fried.
Very good. Andy, follow that.
Well, it's going to be Saturday night and a huge game, really, in La Liga between Atletico Madrid and Athletic. Athletic, of course, have been celebrating their Copa del Rey win, their first win in over a generation of any silverware, which has been warmly received amid flotillas and all the rest of it. Of course, with that trophy win, it's kind of the end of an era as well, with Iker Muniain saying that he's going to leave this week. So an opportunity for him to contribute something big before the end of the season, because if Athletic go to Madrid and win, that takes them above Atletico into fourth place and into a Champions League spot, which would be absolutely huge. I mean, I think everyone knows about the Athletic story, how they've been one of the most successful clubs in Spanish history without using any non-Basque players, which is remarkable, really. Of course, they're going to replace... they're going to have to replace Muniain going into next season, and you know that they'll find a way. Alvaro Jallo, the winger who was Madrid born but brought up in the Basque Country, is coming over from Braga. I suspect he will have an influence in doing that next season. He's been very good for Braga this season. But the thing to point out as well, because they're 3 points behind Atletico at the moment, Athletic, is that they, if they beat Atletico in Madrid this weekend, they'll have the head-to-head drop on them. Goal difference doesn't matter. So in the case of equal points, they will always finish above them if they go and win that game this weekend. So how Atletico approach this is really interesting, because they were dreadful at Alaves last week. Of course, they were really loads of snakes belly after their Champions League exit to Dortmund, which was so, so disappointing, both in actually going out and in the manner as well. It was a real look in the mirror kind of moment, I think. And Atletico have to stand up for this game, because they have to qualify for the Champions League. They're massively reliant on that money. And every time they've played Athletic this season, they've utterly outclassed them as well. So they've got something to prove in terms of just on the pitch before we get to the off the pitch stuff too. So for this, you're not going to be able to sit down and eat a full meal. It's going to be way too tense. It's going to be finger food. It's going to be tortilla de patatas. It's going to be patatas bravas, not just carbs. You know, you can get a bit of chorizo al vino in there as well. Maybe some boquerones, some sardines. Get it all out there. It's going to be a long night, but you're not going to be able to have three courses.
Can you get any of that at the airport in Gothenburg, where you're sat?
You know what? I'm going to find out in about 20 minutes' time.
Yeah. But meanwhile, enjoy one of those burgers, the Alan Bastard burgers.
Thanks, I shall.
Thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure that you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.